KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on the Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW in Santa Monica, this is The Treatment.
I'm Elvis Mitchell. Welcome to The Treatment. You can also hear the show at KCRW.com. I think it's probably safe to say that Pete Docter is a part of Pixar's DNA. He was a writer on Toy Story and Toy Story 2 and WALL-E and Monsters, Inc., which he's also directed. And as a director, he's back to the drawing board, or whatever they call it at Pixar, for his new film, Up. Pete, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
I guess this is the point of the show I ask you to tell the audience what the movie's about.
Yeah, basically it's about this guy, Carl Fredrickson, who's 78-year-old retired balloon salesman. And when his house is threatened, he ties thousands of balloons to his roof and floats it off to South America to make good on this promise that he and his wife had made as kids to go visit this fantastic place and see things no one had ever seen before. Unfortunately, he ends up taking along this neighborhood kid who's named Russell, who has every single achievement badge. He's a wilderness explorer. The only one he's missing is his assisting the elderly badge, and that's why he's been pestering Carl. And so now the two of them are stuck together on this fantastic journey down to South America, where they see wild, weird creatures and have adventures.
One of the things that struck me about the film early on, it reminded me a lot of a Miyazaki film.
Yeah, I think Hayao Miyazaki, of course, directed Totoro and Spirited Away, a whole slew of really fantastic films. Miyazaki is, of course, a huge influence on all of us at Pixar. And I think the thing that I've learned from him is, among many, his ability to just, as opposed to this desperation of going from plot point to plot point to plot point, is just take time with things and pay attention to detail, you know, these little truthfully observed details that he is able to capture and somehow make even more real in animation. That was something we were attempting anyway in this film.
I thought, too, one of the sort of Miyazaki touches is that you're not sure who the bad person is and who the good person is. And Miyazaki kind of plays with morality in that way.
Yeah, and I think that's more truthful of real life, too, that people don't wake up in the morning and say, "Muhat, what evil can I perpetrate today?" You know, they just think, hey, this is what is important to me, and this is how I'm going to get that. And everybody thinks of themselves as good, essentially. It's just how they act that makes them good or bad. So, the character of Muntz in this film was fun to play with that way because he's just an adventurer to the extreme. You know, he's been working at this one task of getting this bird for 50 years. So,
and we should say, too, that Muntz, who's voiced here by Christopher Plummer, is somebody who's an inspiration for Carl, one of the protagonists of the film. And so just playing with that and making that kind of a twist is, I thought, really brought home. I felt like I was watching any of the Miyazaki films where these things that are triggers aren't exactly as positive as we think they're going to be.
Yeah, and that fit in with the whole theme of the film, too, that Carl, you know, worries that he never got this fantastic adventure. He wanted to be an adventurer, so you see right off the bat there him watching this newsreel and looking up to his hero, Charles Muntz, who is like the ultimate adventure. That's what he wants to do someday. So it worked kind of double duty that way.
I really felt that because sort of it's bookended by these two big emotional beats that aren't played for comedy between the opening 10 minutes or so, which gives us Carl's backstory, if you will, and then the last big adventure section. Almost none of that is played for laughs at all.
Looking back on my favorite films, I mean, like Dumbo or 101 Dalmatians, they always have this great balance of fun, action, etc., but then also a real emotional kind of bedrock on which that's all built and a relatability that we're always trying to build into our films, even though they're about monsters or bugs or cars or whatever, you know, that these are characters that we see something of ourselves in. And so that's, of course, what we're trying to do in this one as well.
It's The Treatment. I'm talking to Pete Docter, the director of the new Pixar film, Up. But even in looking at Carl, I mean, you look at that big, beautiful white head of hair and you think of either Spencer Tracy in Bad Day at Blackrock or James Whitmore in The Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah, absolutely. Both those guys we looked at, as well as, my grandfather had a big shock white hair like that. And we looked at a lot of – he's kind of like the best hits, the greatest hits of – all sorts of old folks that we've known. And then as we internalized Carl and really thought about who he is and what drives him, what type of person he is, he just kept coming out square as we would draw him. You know, there's something about this guy who wants to stay put, just do his thing. He has his routine. Every morning he wakes up at 6 o'clock. He has his stewed prunes. He goes, waits for the mail. He's a square. You know, there's something about that that just really felt square. And we tried to, Ricky Nierva and the amazing production design group that worked on the film, we really tried to push that shape language so that contrast Carl then to his wife, Ellie, who's a circle. You know, she's got all these sort of curves and circular shapes. Her head is sort of like a balloon. In fact, we even kind of put that throughout the house. You see photographs of Carl hanging on the wall, and they're all in square frames. And the photographs of Ellie are in circular frames, oval shapes. So really tried to push that shape language as a way of showing you know, what's going on inside Carl through the design of the character itself.
And Russell, the little boy who comes to be his partner on the adventure, is round as well.
He was initially designed kind of like a spinning top just because he's always moving and running around. But, yeah, the balloon shape became kind of important throughout the film, and so we tried to echo that through him.
The film that feels like kind of the analog to me to all this is Peter Pan, where it's that split between, you know, the real world and the house and stepping through into another portal or another dimension.
Yeah, and we did look at that both for design and some amount for story as well. I think, and not unlike The Wizard of Oz, you know, a lot of the films that we looked at had this sort of sense of, did that really happen? You know, when those characters go to Neverland or to Oz, by the time the story ends, you're kind of thinking, well, maybe that was all a dream. We wanted to make sure that that was not the case here, that Carl does actually go somewhere and that he's not just asleep through the whole time. He's going somewhere where there are real stakes, that things could really happen to him, and that he's really going to change, that this character who's shut off and closed away from the world and is just kind of walking through life, by the end of the film is really alive and connecting and, you know, as much as he can for that character, rejoin the human race.
I just wonder for you as a kid if that was kind of a thing too, where you had a space or like a studio in your house or something where you kind of got to invent this world for yourself.
Oh, yeah, in multiple places. I mean, my parents were very lenient with allowing me to do whatever I wanted with my room. And so, you know, I'd paint the walls and I actually toted back. I grew up in Minnesota where we didn't have a lot of exotic stuff, but I brought from my grandparents who lived in Santa Barbara. We strapped a bunch of bamboo to our van as we drove back home, and I had all that. I made kind of a tiki kind of room. It was inspired by the tiki room at Disneyland, you know, with the talking birds and everything. And I just was transported by that place. You know, that was amazing to me. You sit in the middle of this room and the flowers start singing at you and everything comes alive. One of the things that really intrigued me as a kid is kind of what you see in Kermit the Frog, that on the one hand, you know, this is just a bunch of felt with ping pong balls on it. And on the other hand, you're totally engaged with this character and believe him as a person, you know. And there's some sort of magic about animation that is the same thing, where I know it's just a bunch of drawings or computer images, and yet when it works, you not only believe in those characters, you get lost in the emotions. You get to laughing or crying or, you know, really caught up in the story. And that's really cool. When that happens, that's what it's all about to me.
Because it's got to work first and foremost as a piece of emotional storytelling, doesn't it?
Yeah. And you know, these films for us at Pixar, it's about a 5-year process generally. And on this film, it was 3.5 years of story, just working on hammering those story beats and getting the characters to be appealing and engaging and interesting. And then the production itself is about 1.5, 2 years. So we really spend the lion's share on getting the story working.
Well, I'm just fascinated in the way you work that it's so much about space. I mean, the confinement of being indoors and those four walls and that kind of cramped feeling of those four walls versus bursting out of that. I mean, that's a really interesting kind of paradigm to create in an animated film.
We worked hard to make Carl's house feel kind of both cozy but also could be claustrophobic. You know, there's a great movie that has three older gentlemen, and it's called, it'll come
is
to
it,
me in a minute.
Is it Going in Style?
Thank you. And they had this great rule. I probably was because of actual shooting location. It looked like they shot in a real apartment. Everything is framed. You know, you have characters framed by doorways or windows or walls. And so it just has the sense that the characters are sort of boxed in and confined. So we tried to mimic that, even though, of course, in the computer you could blow away walls or shoot through the ceiling or whatever. We tried to mimic that same sense of closed off, kind of square, locked off space for Carl and his house. And then, of course, you contrast that with where he goes to South America, and it's just these wide vistas with nothing for miles and miles and miles, and just you want to feel the wind in your face and just get this sense of total just extending off into the horizon. So those are kind of the two extremes of the film.
It's The Treatment. I'm talking to Pete Docter, the director of the new Pixar film, Up. You can also hear the show at kcrw.com. It's funny you mentioned Going in Style, because that's also a film, too, where it's about these guys being, at least one of them, forcing the others to take on a vacation, or rather a kind of an adventure.
Yeah, and that I mean, not only had some great sort of, well, wonderful acting and great behavior that we looked at, but really kind of a cool, unusual storytelling to it, you know? It takes these interesting twists and turns that you just don't expect. It was a cool movie. I recommended.
Yeah, it's really fun. And we're talking about Going Inside, which Martin Brest directed with George Burns,
right,
and a few other actors. And I guess I just find myself, too, thinking about the great Planet of the Apes stuff when they do get to travel and we get to see all these sort of things around them. And it's just that jungle reminds me of that.
The jungle was, again, kind of inspired by Peter Pan. And we were looking as we went down there and did this research trip. We were walking through the jungle, you know, closing one eye to kind of simulate what the camera sees and going, how are we going to shoot this? There's just this incredible complexity to everything. And looking at every jungle film we could find, it seems like the first thing people do when they're shooting in jungles is bring out the fog machine, you know? And we did the same thing, essentially. We brought atmosphere in, and it really allows you to simplify in depth and kind of exaggerate that atmosphere. So as things drop back, you have a very clear sense that this tree is in front of that tree, in front of that tree. And Peter Pan does it beautifully, where it just softens things, even like the edge detail will get sort of more mushy, and it'll blue, it just turns to this beautiful blue-purple. So we were definitely inspired by that film.
There's also that great sense of perspective that you get in Peter Pan that's kind of rare for animation.
Yeah, and of course, this being computer animation, it really, the computer looks at perspective mathematically perfect, you know, and sometimes too perfect. we had to mess things up a little bit, especially for this world, which is a very caricatured style that we were going for in this film. Most of us, if you measure us by our head, for example, you know, we're like 7 or 8 heads tall. Carl is 3. You know, it's a very stylized, kind of pushed, caricatured world. And things like his hands, as he holds, say, this book, which is featured prominently in the film, the adventure book. If he opens the book and he puts his hand on it, his hand fills the entire book, you know, because his hands are huge. So for those scenes, we had to shrink his hands down. Hopefully this is nothing you ever notice in the movie. But there were a lot of little cheats like that, the size of balloons and the size of the characters versus other things. We were doing a lot of scaling on a shot-by-shot basis.
Well, I guess we'll notice it now because it's all in 3D. We should take a break. My guest is director Pete Docter. His new film for Pixar is Up. He's talking to us from Pixar in Northern California. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment. More to come.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Welcome back. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment. I'm talking to my guest, director Pete Docter. His new film out of Pixar is up. You were talking about research before we got going, and one of the things I find myself wondering about for these films is that do you work out first what emotional beats you want to hit with the film and how you want that? Because there's a very specific rhythm that each of these films have in terms of playing out the emotional life, and then that's often where the laughs come from after that, is just setting up kind of an emotional tableau.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's really important because not to say laughs are easy, but there are always laughs to be had. And especially when you get to know the characters, you know, you can get sometimes laughs out of just lines that are not even really very funny, but they're funny because of who's saying them and how they say it, you know. Those emotionally truthful moments of characters just interacting. Things like, you know, Russell, they're walking through the jungle and Carl thinks he hears somebody and he starts talking and they walk forward and it's a rock. And Russell says, "You were talking to a rock," and it's not really a funny line, but it gets a big laugh in the story, in the film, because of the context of it and because of the character. And those are the fun ones. But the structure of the story and what happens and feeling like it's emotionally truthful, that's really difficult, and that ends up being the lion's share of the work, I think.
Because finally, it has to be about behavior, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And that's what animation, I think, is. Animators are certainly keyed into behavior. Like, how does someone do something, even as simple as, say, pick up a fork, you know, from the table? And everybody does it very differently, very subtly differently. Those are when you can find those little behaviors that start to define who a character is and really start to feel as though the audience can see into that character's brain a little bit and understand what they're thinking and feeling. That's the way the great animators trained at the Disney studio did things, and that's the way we were trained.
One of the things that I really noticed about Carl in the film is that as the stakes are heightened, then he starts to move more. Because you're talking about that kind of square, blocky, implacable shape of his. He's when things really have to pay off, he's in motion.
Yeah, and that's something we worked at very intentionally from the beginning, was the idea of, okay, here at the beginning, Carl is very limited in his movement. You know, he's only going to take short steps. He's going to move his arms less. And then by the end, he really comes in and is really connecting with the world, and he becomes a full-out action hero, you know, as much as he can. We looked at the Senior Olympics and other footage of older folks moving and running. And, of course, what happens, a lot of the bones start to fuse a little bit, and you have your limited range of mobility compared to younger people. But we really tried to get that age progression in movement as well as through dialogue and everything else.
Yeah, because as that was happening, I found myself flashing back to, of all things, there's a scene in The Untouchables where Sean Connery and this other actor named James Bradford are fighting. You're aware of these two old guys beating each other up and what's really at stake here. And there's the same kind of tension going on when it's Carl and Munch kind of staking out this territory and trying to claim something for themselves.
That was a tricky scene to grab hold of, because it's almost like you were mentioning The Simpsons and gags. You know, that was something that we early on got a little bit tempted into doing too many gag things. And what happened was you kind of pull the rug out from under people if it's all about jokes at this very tense scene where the protagonist and the antagonist are facing off. On the other side of things, it is animated. It is there is something really funny about the slowest, old manniest fight in cinema history, you know. And so, how do you play with those things? And it was a juggling act.
It also even gets to this question that we're talking about before. This thing that Miyazaki does, I think, often so well, and that I think a lot of the Pixar films do too, is, you know, the world or the definition of heroism is a really tricky thing to define. And you guys seem to get a lot of pleasure in playing with that.
It is tricky. You know, for your main character especially, if the character is too kind of heroic and not relatable enough, you don't really connect with the story, you know. There needs to be some kind of feeling of, oh, yeah, I understand what he's going for and going through, and I would probably do something similar to that. And then hopefully by the end you really transport people and say, okay, at my best, maybe I would do what that guy's doing, you know?
Because I find myself thinking, too, or wondering if there were a number of changes in the kind of the way you were playing things out in the relationship between Russell and Carl, for example, in early versions of the scripts that you guys are going through.
Yeah, I think most of the relationships that we've developed in the films do go through some twists and turns. I mean, you of course, start by watching as many of other films as you can that kind of play in the same sandbox and learn from them and see what worked and what didn't. Interestingly, with this film, the very first draft didn't even have Russell in it. So we had the story. We knew that we wanted Carl to be much like Rick from Casablanca or, you know, Scrooge in Christmas Carol. He's a guy who's just kind of walking through the motions. He's not really alive. And by the end, he's really reconnected with the world and is much more vital and integral to what's happening. And the way we were attempting to do that was with just the bird and the dog. And in the first draft, the bird laid this egg, and it was almost like a surrogate baby that needed to get safely away from this guy who was after it as well. And the character of Russell was something that developed later as a way of taking something from Carl's own world, you know, the modern world, our world, and then growing along with this character. And then when he comes back, you have kind of a benchmark, a kind of a yardstick by which to measure his change.
It's the treatment. I'm talking to Pete Docter, the director of the new Pixar film, Up. At what point did the Russell character come into play?
It was pretty early on. I mean, a lot of these sort of basic huge changes like I'm talking about happen within the first, you know, 4 or 5 months of playing around with the story idea. We had done, I think, a first draft of the script without Russell. And then actually, Bob Peterson, who was the guy that I worked with early on, Bob, of course, co-writer on this film, basically the head writer, and ended up as the co-director of the film, he got taken on to Ratatouille for a little while. And so I was looking around for other people to collaborate with and was able to talk Tom McCarthy, who wrote and directed The Station Agent and The Visitor. He came on for 3 months and did two drafts of the script. And it was in collaboration with him that Russell came out.
Wow. So you found somebody whose own way of working is very close to yours in terms of like an inner space that's kind of stayed and the outer world, which is kind of threatening. We've had Tom on the show a couple of times before talk about his films, and he works in a lot of the same ways that you are, where the characters have to get out of these environments that they put themselves in and test themselves in the real world.
Yeah, it was actually his film, The Station Agent, was one of the templates for our film. It's a very similar story where you have a guy who's just closed off and alone, of course, assembles an oddball family. And Tom, I think, having not had worked in animation before, he was looking for those human connections. And so the idea of doing Russell and bringing this kid along was something that developed as he was writing.
Interesting, too, because Russell also represents kind of ambition, which I like too, because that also can be a really funny element in animated films as well. It's kind of this unchecked ambition that can cause trouble.
Yeah, and he was designed kind of to poke at Carl. You know, he's like this relentlessly optimistic kid who's always after Carl to get his explorer badge, you know, his assisting the elderly badge. And he is in just connecting with the world and being observant and pushing Carl into areas that he probably wouldn't have gone otherwise, you know, he really ends up changing Carl. And we kind of designed the character, definitely with that in mind.
One of the things that's kind of fun to watch about these two together, though, is that they're both so completely confident about what it is they're going to do. And just watching those different kinds of confidences bang into each other.
Yeah, it's fun when you find these characters that are so opposite in some ways that they just, you don't know how this is ever going to work. And yeah, like you say, Carl has his idea of where he's going. He's been dreaming about this since he was literally like 7 or 8. And he's going to get there come hell or high water. And then Russell, you know, he ends up kind of pushing Carl in different directions as they meet these other characters that need help. And, you know, Russell's code of always helping, assisting with wild animals and whatnot. So you really place these characters at odds, and that's where the fun happens.
I just find myself thinking back to, you know, one of, maybe one of my if not my, beside this, my one of my favorite Pixar films, Monsters, Inc., and just the kind of that relationship that size has, you know, and it's the smaller guys, be it Mike or Russell here, or even to some extent Carl, who have this kind of world-beater thing going on. They just got to dominate and conquer.
Yeah. It's, I think, something that animation can really play with that, of course, you have trouble with in live action. Everybody's roughly the same height. Obviously, there are extremes, but, you know, with Monsters, Inc., it was certainly really fun to push that. And, okay, you've got a kid who's, you know, 2.5 feet tall, and then this monster who's like 10 feet tall. And, it's definitely fun to play. I love when you can take advantage of the medium and really push things into areas that you could never do in any other way. You know, things like Kevin the Bird, which just as an animator, I mean, that's where kind of that character originated from, was watching birds at the zoo and thinking, I'd love to animate that. There's something about the bird itself is just this unpredictable, weird, like it's as though if you could listen to the bird's brain, you just hear like a telephone dial tone, you know, you just don't know what's going on in there. And yet the way that the bird expresses himself is almost like Buster Keaton, where it's just all in movement. It's not facial expressions. That's something that would be hard to do in any other way but through animation.
It's a treat. I'm talking to director Pete Docter about his new film, Up. You can also hear the show at kcrw.com, where you're also inspired to some extent by those robot birds at Disneyland.
Yeah, no, I mean, for sure, Disneyland was a big influence on me growing up. Kind of getting back to your earlier discussion about other worlds. You know, you go on something like Pirates of the Caribbean or the Haunted Mansion, and you know in one part of your brain that you're in Anaheim, but the other part just so fully believes that I'm down in the Spanish Main in a small town that's being ransacked by pirates. You know, how cool is that? So just this alternate reality. You go to Disneyland and basically you have a job. It's almost like you are cast as the lead character there, and your job is to play, to just imagine yourself and lose yourself. That's why it's sad now, and I'm as guilty as the next guy, when you see people standing in line and they're texting or they're on their cell phone or whatever, and you know, the reason you paid the money to get in here is to lose yourself in this alternate reality.
Do you feel in some way in the back of your head you're trying to fight against that too? Now that there are so many distractions from people, even when they're watching movies in movie theaters, you've got to do something to really make them sign that contract in effect and come on board.
Yeah. And, you know, my worst case when we're making these films is I'm thinking ahead to, okay, this is going to screen on an airplane where, you know, the screen is slightly green colored and the stewardess is handing out hot towels standing in front of the screen. And, you know, I'm thinking, no, what I want is for people to just lose themselves in this film, almost like a dream or something where you just get caught up in it. And after an hour and a half, the film ends and you kind of wake up for the first time and go, wow, what a wild trip that was.
Well, we're out of time. Pete, thank you so much for doing this. It's a great conversation. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
My guest is director Pete Docter. His new film from Pixar, in 3D in many places in the country, is Up. Our recording engineer, KCRW in Santa Monica, is Mario Diaz, with technical assistance from Paul Ruess at the Argo Network in New York and Vince Caro at Pixar in Northern California. Bob Carlson is the editor. Gemma Dempsey is producer. If you'd like to comment on today's show, post your thoughts at kcrw.com/thetreatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
An audio archive of this and other programs can be found at kcrw.com. For questions and comments about The Treatment, please email us at thetreatment@kcrw.com. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on the Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.